From the gateway to the west, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Feel this, a 2.8 magnitude earthquake, yep, in Oklahoma, 10 miles from Norman, Oklahoma. Might want to fast blast me if you felt the rumbling. By the way, the International Space Station, the oxygen generator has failed for good. They've got some backup, but not a lot. They have 140-day supply there of oxygen. That is it. There's a two-man crew. They're going to have to wait for parts to get there before they can do any fixing. So some tense situations up there now aboard the ISS. 140 days of oxygen left there, so they have to get some new supplies up that way. South Korea, by the way, has promised to make a substantial proposal if North Korea returned to the six-nation talks concerning its nuclear program and said the communist nation had raised tensions by preparing ingredients for atomic bombs. Meanwhile, U.S. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley warned of unspecified action against North Korea if it carried out a nuclear test, a position echoed by Japan. The two Koreas met for the first time in 10 months. Talks broke off in July after mass defections to South Korea from the group coming from the North. But the North said that the South kidnapped them. I don't think so. I think they went on their own. We'll be back in a moment with our guest, Charles R. Smith, as we talk about cyber war and also, of course, the situation in North Korea right here on Coast to Coast AM. Cyber war columnist Charles R. Smith, one of America's leading experts on cyber technology and its implications for war, terrorism, privacy, and every way technology interacts with our lives. He's an exclusive columnist for Newsmax.com as its cyber war expert and is currently president and CEO of Soft War, his own consulting company. Mr. Smith's life sounds like a character in a Tom Clancy novel. He received a U.S. government top secret clearance as a top-level computer engineer for EDS, and there he was assigned to work with the U.S. Army on logistic projects during the Cold War. He currently provides security software for medical information services, hospitals, encryption software for secure email, direct communications, electronic commerce, and internet web services. And during the past 10 years, Smith has also become a noted investigative journalist. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hello, Charles. How are you again?
Thank you for having me on board.
Good
I appreciate
to
it.
Have him. Likewise. Hey, have you heard anything, by the way, of this series of email viruses going around the world that it's in German or it may be coming from Germany? Have you heard about this one?
Yeah, we've had several different alerts coming across the boards recently. Some of it was in reference to these German viruses. It's a, you know, classic email parasite, basically burying itself within the email or as an attachment. Usually, if you're pretty well set up with a email antivirus system or a standard antivirus protection, you're in good shape. And if, of course, you're smart enough not to open attachments that you don't recognize from someone else, instead deleting them, then you probably also won't get a hold of it. It's not nearly as dangerous as the recent spate of Trojan attacks, which essentially are directed towards anyone on the net. You don't have to receive email. You don't have to log on to a website. All you have to do is connect to the net.
Oh, my.
Yeah, yeah. That one is much more dangerous. Generally, they're aimed at phishing, and that's with a PH, designed to embed themselves into your system and obtain passwords, credit card information, personal data, and spin them back to their original authors. The Trojans can be essentially negated by getting a good firewall piece of software or hardware, essentially, that will stop the query before it occurs. So, yeah, there have been a number of nasties circulating around on the net, and as usual, the primary reason for most of this is professionals who are aimed at stealing information. Some of it is, of course, just vandals who want to destroy things.
Why does there seem to be this this massive influx of viruses in this period, Charles?
It's fairly popular, okay? It's also a reasonably easy way to obtain personal data, which can be resold on the market, as well as penetrate into systems and essentially resell the addresses to spammers. So it is a profitable business for those who engage in it. Someone, for example, using the Trojans can take over your system, resell your address, essentially, so whenever you're on, a spammer can utilize your computer to send out spam email as well as other nasties. And you'll find over the course of time that your system will eventually slow down to the point where it will become useless, and you will have to clean out your system or even literally start from scratch, reboot, and scratch everything that's on your disk drive and reinstall your software. So for all practical purposes, the two basic, about 80-90% of the attacks that are out there are going to be, one, vandals who are just engaging in fun,
mm-hmm.
from their own point of view, and two, the professionals, generally independents, who are criminals who are intent on stealing information as well as stealing access to your system.
Okay, well, that's good advice for all of us, Charles.
Get a firewall, get an antivirus package. The two most popular is Symantec, better known as Norton, as well as McAfee, and they both are very functional, but there's a lot of other very good products, some of which are actually free on the net.
How about a good firewall, by the way?
I personally use the Norton firewall, and it's only because it's fairly easy to install and operate. But, again, McAfee produces an excellent firewall. And, again, you can also go out to a number of different other manufacturers and distributors on the net, some of whom distribute some very fine firewall software.
Well, see, not only do we get to talk with you about nukes in North Korea, but we get some good free advice from you about our computers. So it's well worth having you on today, Charles.
Appreciate it.
Now, let's talk about what's going on in North Korea. And we also have to talk later about Iran as well, because they're working in tandem doing something. But there seems to be now an urgency about North Korea. They, of course, threatening to do a nuclear test. Japan very upset about it. The United States very upset about it. In your opinion, Charles, what is the current status of North Korea's nuclear arsenal? What's going on there?
What you're looking at is probably somewhere between 4 and 6 weapon systems, one of which is a test system. These are deliverable, so they're probably ranging in the weight somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 pounds. Their Nodong missile system is most likely the intended operational system that would carry these weapons. North Koreans also obviously appear to be in the process of digging themselves a nice big fat tunnel into the side of a mountain. And I think what's even more indicative, they've set up viewing stands. This would appear to be in preparation for an underground nuclear test. And that's what got everyone upset, because our satellite data essentially showed them performing these operations. Usually you don't dig these kinds of things unless you have intention to use them.
Well, if they don't know, if they don't know what they're doing, they could blow up that whole region, couldn't they?
I think one of the things that we have to understand about Korea is it has a very intricate underground water table. A good portion of the water that flows into the south comes from under the mountains in the north. And a underground nuclear test may actually end up polluting a good portion of the water table in Korea. It may not necessarily blow the entire peninsula off the map, but you could, in essence, pollute a lot of the water sources, even for major cities in the north, if you don't detonate the system in exactly the right place. And therein lies the problem. The question is, where is exactly the right place? Even if you've lived there and you're a professional engineer and you've got all the staff and equipment, you're only guessing. A detonation obviously can cause a considerable amount of damage in a small area, and the net result of the radioactivity may leach into the ground table, the water table, and of course, again, pollute not only the north, but the south as well. So that's been one of the grave concerns about them doing a nuclear test. It's not, an underground test is not really a smart idea in that kind of environment.
I don't particularly want to see nukes in their hands or the hands of the Iranians. However, being a devil's advocate for just a moment, we have nations such as Israel, China, India, Pakistan, the United States. Who else might possess these things? They have them now. North Korea simply says, look, we want it for our own defensive purposes. How can you negate a country from having nukes when other countries have nukes?
Well, one of the ways that we have to approach this is, first and foremost, the North Koreans have made it very clear that they will forcibly repatriate themselves with the South. They officially do not recognize the South Korean government. Kim Jong-il's policy has been laid out directly that he wants to reunite the peninsula under his benevolent leadership. And if necessary, he will kill most of the people in the South to do it. He has made it very clear that the utilization of nuclear weapons may very well require him to open this. The same thing also applies when you start talking about Japan. He's made open and belligerent threats to vaporize certain sections of Japan. Of course, there's no love lost between either the North or South and Japan. Of course, it's from the Japanese occupation during World War II. The Koreans, the North Koreans in particular, if they want to develop such a system, would have to forego the kind of contacts and economic development that another nation state can engage in. And we have the right to say, we're not going to trade with you, we're not going to work with you, we're not going to have diplomatic contacts. And if you recall, when Pakistan detonated their device, that was after the end of many years of sanctions, of not providing aid or weapons or any number of items. In fact, trade sanctions immediately followed. Same thing with India.
Why didn't we get really tough, though, with the Pakistanians at the time?
Our relationship with Pakistan has been hot and cold, and right now it's get warming up and being nice. The reverse problem is that we know that in the case of Pakistan, there are members of the Pakistani government, in particular the ISI, which is their CIA, that are Al-Qaeda, that basically dedicating themselves to the destruction of the United States. They've tried to assassinate President Musharraf multiple times. So, once again, you know, if you want to talk about getting tough, we haven't provided any aid. We certainly didn't allow American companies to do development or bidding work. We refused to sell them jet fighters for well over a decade. So that blew cold, especially when they decided to go ahead and develop their bomb. The flip side is, in the case of Musharraf and the Pakistanis, they have not directly threatened U.S. forces or U.S. allies with their nuclear weapons. And I only have to, you know, bring out the quote from Park Gap-dong, a former chief of the European section of North Korea, who defected, and his quote was, if Kim develops a nuclear weapon, they will use it on the South Koreans or Japan.
Is it going to blow back on them, too? I mean, that region is really too small for using nukes.
Dropping one on their old archenemy, Japan, would score a lot of points with them. It would also, of course, prevent or cause a lot of problems with any U.S. reinforcements that may try to come across to help the South Koreans. Keep in mind that the 1.2 million man North Korean army lingers just across the DMZ. Seoul, South Korea is within artillery range. So all of this would be in a coordinated attack. And if they dropped one on the South, well, you know, acceptable losses, even if it's several million people. Kim Jong-il really doesn't care. The guy, well, you know, the best way of describing him, I guess, came to me from a former intelligence official who just looked at me and said, yeah, still crazy after all these years. Kim Jong-il is the absolute total ruler slash dictator, whatever you want to call him, of North Korea. I mean, this guy is called the dear leader in their vernacular, and according to their own official press, he was born in a sacred mountain, Mount Paktu in northern Korea.
Siberia. Wasn't it in Siberia?
Actually born in Siberia during the Second World War. His real name is Yuri Asenovich Kim. Of course, the official propaganda as spun to the people is that the gods delivered Kim to this sacred mountain in North Korea as the son of their revered older father, Kim Il-sung. And of course, Kim Il essentially led the North Koreans during their attack on South Korea, which took us through the Korean War, and all the way up through Kim taking over for his father in 1994.
Well, Kim, let's talk about him while we're on him right now. We'll get back to some of the missiles because they are hand in hand. Isn't he? He's a playboy type. The guy wears lifts in his shoes. He's got a phobia about his height. And, I mean, he's a very strange character who all of a sudden popped up to prominence, ran the military when he had no military experience, and then, of course, when Daddy died, took over the country, right?
Yeah, he's actually 5'2", no kidding. He wears 4-inch platform shoes, and you know, according to his personal chef who defected, you know, he's got a 10,000 bottle wine cellar. He likes blondes, especially Western European blondes. He collects Mazda RX-7 sports cars, which he drives around in his own personal highway.
He has his own highway.
Oh, yeah. And when I was talking with Park, he definitely went into detail that Kim stages these all-night banquets at which attendance for the government officials is mandatory as well as heavy drinking is mandatory. This is one of those little things he picked up from Joe Stalin. He has a troupe of personal strippers for his own entertainment. I'm going to talk about lap dancing. And, you know, he's reportedly sent his wife and children on a secret trip to Tokyo for a run at the Japanese Disneyland. He has a collection of over 20,000 videotapes. He's a Chicago Bulls fan. We do know this, you know, because Madeleine Albright actually took him an autographed basketball.
All right, stay with us, Charles. We'll talk a little bit more about Kim Jong-il and some of his strange habits. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
She seems so glad to see me. I just smile. And we talked about some old times, and we drank ourselves some beers. Still crazy after all these years.
Podcasting, the new way to get Coast to Coast AM to your computer. Available to all StreamLink subscribers at coasttocoastam.com.
I'm not the kind of man who tends to socialize. I seem to lean on old familiar ways. And I ain't no fool for love songs that whisper in my ears. Still crazy after all these years. Oh, still crazy.
The Gateway to the West. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
And we're going to continue our discussion tonight with Charles R. Smith. A little bit later on tonight, we'll take some of your phone calls. We'll get into more bizarre habits of the leader of North Korea and talk about the possibility of these nukes and just what could happen in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Charles R. Smith. Charles, let's get back into the mindset of Kim. How old is this guy, do you know?
We're not quite sure. His official birthday is February 16th, 1941, but the records indicate that he is a little bit older than that. So basically, we figure he's around 62.
Is he insane?
I wouldn't say insane as much as this follows a typical pattern of the classic dictator kind of son operation like Uday or Kusei for Saddam, Ceausescu, Romania, that kind of thing. He likes to be the absolute power slash dictator. He's grown up in a caretaken environment and in a world that is essentially very impoverished So he's not used to those kinds of things. I mean, you know, the guy's a gourmet cook. Yet, you know, he starved to death over 2 million of his own people. So I wouldn't say insane as much as he just acts crazy because he's been driven to this point where he lives his life in his own little environment.
What is he capable of doing, Charles?
According to some of the high-ranking officials who have defected, such as Park Dap Dong, he is quite capable of launching a nuclear strike against South Korea and Japan, feels that it may very well be necessary and wants to restart the war. He is very well known for running a series of gulag camps where upwards to 4 million people have either been imprisoned or tortured, and we do know well over 1 million have been killed. You know, he rules with an iron fist. I mean, there is absolute, total dictatorship. He makes decisions personally. No one in the middle management or even upper management or bureaucracy makes a decision. It is done by Kim's personal whim. A real good example of the kind of mindset. He decided at one point that he wanted to start a film industry, so he had an actress and her director, former husband, kidnapped from South Korea, brought them to the North, and had them make films for him, including a monster film.
And then what did he do with them? Send them back?
No, they managed to escape. They'd endeared themselves with the dear leader to the point where they were actually allowed out of North Korea on a tour of some of the films in Eastern Europe and decided now's the time to bolt, to which they defected back, so to speak, and then made their story known that they had actually been kidnapped in the middle of the night. And this, of course, is a general theme that has been played out by the North Koreans under the command of Kim. He's ordered the kidnapping of Japanese civilians. That's one of the reasons why Japan has had a considerable amount of problem with the North. They discovered that people missing from some of the remote areas had actually been kidnapped by the North Koreans. A Japanese actress slash singer was kidnapped once by the North Koreans in an apparent attempt to satisfy Kim's sexual desires because he had the hots for her.
A straight battle, one-on-one, North Korea-Japan. Who wins? No involvement from the United States.
Oh, no involvement from the United States. Well, the Japanese currently do not sport nuclear weapons.
Right.
The Japanese Self-Defense Force is not really geared towards overseas or out-of-country operations.
No,
they could defend themselves.
They got a pretty okay Navy, don't they?
They have a very good Navy. Remember, the Japanese fly the F-15 Eagle. They make the Eagle. It's the F-15J.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently manufacturing their own F-2 aircraft, which is essentially a Japanese variation of the F-16 Fighting Falcon, and it's an extremely good variant as well. The Japanese could, if they desired, have a nuclear force of probably 80 to 100 weapons, and they can do that within 24 months of initiating that operation.
Of course, once Kim catches on that they're attempting to make one, he may just jump right now.
Well, Kim currently sports, as I've noted, about 4 to 6 weapons. He has in his inventory actually deployed some new systems. I believe, what is it? There are currently 18 battalions of Nodong missiles, including 9 in the country's northern Pyongyang province. That brings him to a total of around 200 of the Nodong. The Nodong has about a 1,000-mile range, 800 to 900, is capable of carrying a nuclear weapon. And he's got between 650 and 800 Scud missiles. They do manufacture the Scud, by the way, and obviously, as we found out just before the second Gulf War, ship them around the world for hard, cold cash.
What's the relationship between the Chinese and North Korea, the real relationship, Charles?
The best descriptor of that comes from the number two commander of the Chinese People's Liberation Army, a guy by the name of General Zhang Gangkai. General Zhang referred to the North Koreans, quote, North Korea is to China as lips are to teeth. The North Koreans would not be where they are today with nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles, and cruise missile technology without China. They would not have energy. The Chinese could easily shut off the oil supply. They are the sole supplier of oil and petroleum products to North Korea. That would bring the North Korean army to a standstill, obviously. No gas, you don't go very far. Those kinds of things could easily happen if Beijing decided that they wanted to do that. They're not going to. They've made it very clear in these six-party talks that they will not. The Nodong systems that North Korea currently is sporting, as well as the newer Taipodong variants, which are much longer range and can bring the West Coast under target, the West Coast of the United States.
Even right now?
Oh, yeah. Remember, they popped one off in 1998. The Taipodong variant has an interesting story under itself, but the longer-range missile systems, such as the Nodong and the Taipodong, are actually based on Chinese designs that were given to North Korea. We do know for a fact that the North Korean bomb design is Chinese. And the reason for that is when Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi came clean and said, I don't want WMDs, here's my entire WMD program, let's work.
Assuming he was telling the truth, of course.
Well, he's allowed U.S. inspectors, U.K. inspectors, and U.N. inspectors anywhere in his country without interference. And that's a good point. And he's also turned over some extensive information, such as the blueprints that he purchased from the North Koreans on how to build your own bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Those blueprints are in Chinese. They are originally a Chinese bomb design, originating back in, I believe, the late 1970s. It's an implosion device designed to go on a missile warhead. So,
okay, but getting back to the original question, we have nukes, India has nukes, Pakistan has nukes, China has nukes, Russia has nukes, Israel has nukes. How can we, as a group of nations, go to countries like Korea and Iran, other than the unfortunate rhetoric, for example, with Iran saying they want to demolish Israel and Korea saying the same about its neighbors, is that why we're opposed to them having nukes? I mean, what would happen if all of a sudden they became a democracy overnight? Would we say, oh, it's okay?
We probably wouldn't say it's okay, but again, with the non-proliferation treaties, essentially, the attempt to keep nuclear weapons in the bottle, so to speak, is one of those things where we don't necessarily have to trade with you. We don't have to give you money. We don't have to give you aid. We don't even have to give you access in diplomatic terms. We can isolate you if we want to. And if you want to participate in the world as we work in the world, then, you know, we would like to see you come around with treaties. Remember, the North Koreans originally agreed, oh, we're not going to develop nuclear weapons. Send us some money and oil. And we sent them money and oil, and they promptly started working on nuclear weapons.
That's because our intelligence was so screwed up, we didn't realize what they were doing.
Well, it wasn't exactly a matter of not realizing, is that we weren't looking. To be honest with you, in some cases, our intelligence operations were fabricated. That's the Taipodong example. The Clinton administration not only had a habit of telling lies to the world, to the United States and the people here, but to the rest of the world. And one of those was the 1998 report on nuclear and ballistic missile technology in North Korea.
I think, though, Charles, every administration lately has been lying to us about everything.
Well, you know, this is one of those cases where we're talking about lying about weapons of mass destruction. We had satellite information. We had photographic data that showed the North Koreans preparing the Taipodong missile test. Yet the CIA issues this report saying that they will not be able to have a long-range missile system for 10 to 15 years. Well, 3 months after that report was released, and literally 2 weeks after the Joint Chiefs of Staff issue a proclamation saying it'll be at least 10 years, Kim Jong-il pops the Taipodong missile over Japan and lands a simulated nuclear warhead off the coast of Alaska. Kim was working to a different timetable.
Why then have we spent our time and our resources and our energy and our men and women in Iraq when we should have been concentrating on North Korea and Iran?
The easy answer to that is Iraq is doable. The truce, and I emphasize this, the truce on the Korean Peninsula is a lot more damaging. The Middle East, of course, we had grave concerns about oil supplies and being able to guarantee ourselves.
Bingo.
Okay, and, you know, we don't have that problem with North Korea, obviously. Then there's that other little issue, Israel. North Korea may have arch enemies in Japan and South Korea and the United States, but they don't have Israel to attack within range. The same thing does not apply. It was quite a tinderbox in the Middle East, as you well know. So, again, Iraq was doable. We had the forces in region. We had the UN mandates. We had the northern and southern aircraft watches.
And they had the oil.
Well, look at it in these terms. In the case of Iraq, we had 500 to 600 combat aircraft in that region for well over a decade. We had 3 carrier battle groups and up to 5 carrier battle groups patrolling the region for 10 years. We had over 100,000 troops in the region for 10 years. That gets expensive. At the moment, we probably have no more than 100 aircraft in region. We don't need advanced combat aircraft. We have squadrons that have been stationed in the Gulf for over 10 years that have finally come home. We have maybe 1 carrier battle group in region. We don't need any more than that. We've freed up a considerable amount of our firepower, aircraft, armed forces, naval forces, and are now able to turn our eyes to other areas such as Taiwan and Korea. And believe me, a Pacific war obviously will require extensive naval command. So overall, the fact that we finally decided to finish it in Iraq is, in essence, saving us billions of dollars.
Well, I don't know about that, Charles, because we're spending billions
There's
of dollars.
No question. You know, when you're looking at 3 to 5 carrier battle groups in that region, they weren't out in the Pacific. They weren't patrolling off North Korea's coast. They weren't patrolling off the Chinese coast. They weren't in Guam. They weren't hanging around the straits. Those kinds of things have a completely different view in Beijing and Pyongyang. Obviously, the Seventh Fleet or the U.S. Navy suddenly appearing over the horizon and them not anticipating it can sort of give you the willies.
But Saddam Hussein, as bad as he was, prompted up by us initially, was not capable of developing a nuclear weapon as quickly as the Koreans were, or what the Iranians very well could be.
Well, so as we both know, Saddam Hussein, armed with his oil for food money, was shopping.
Oh,
and
sure,
the North Koreans were quite willing to sell.
Well, again, though, that we should have concentrated on North Korea. Now, though, we're in a mess here. We're in a quagmire. What are we going to do? I mean, they're like you just said, they have at least four. They've got the missile technology. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it as a group?
Well, there's a number of things that you have to keep in mind that are disadvantages on the other side. And one of the biggest disadvantages is that very narrow leadership at the top. Kim, especially according to many of the defectors, if an attack is made on the North, will probably jump into his personal train because he has a fear of flying and make a hasty retreat across the Manchurian border to his sanctuary with his Chinese pals. We do know that Kim may very well have his own problems. The 2004 explosion after his train passed through a city in North Korea may very well have been an assassination attempt. There are some nebulous problems that this other side faces. The North Korean military, sure, at 1.2 million men, is very powerful, but they also have limited mobility. Very clearly, their biggest problem is without oil, they're not going to move very far very fast. That's one of the reasons why this concentration on missiles, and it's also one of the reasons why we've been frantically developing a national missile defense.
Well, but it's failed in several of its last tests. I'm not sure it works right now.
Look very carefully. Now, the national missile, the land-based interceptor, is having its own problems. On the other hand, the Navy interceptor, the SM-3, of the last seven tests has had seven direct hits. If we're going to do anything, it's going to be a couple of Aegis cruisers stationed off the coast of North Korea. Anything coming up and out is going to be fair game.
If they get through, though, we're in trouble.
Very clearly, which is the reason why we have to put more emphasis on the development and deployment to Fort Greely and especially at Vandenberg, which will protect the West Coast.
Where is China right now, Charles, in terms of telling the North Koreans to stop its nuclear effort? Or are they saying anything? Stay with us, because we'll talk about that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM at the top of the hour. This night's already flying by. Back with Charles Smith. Later on, we'll open up your phone lines and let you chat with them, too.
After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.